Hey everybody, welcome to AJ's Side Panel. I'm here this episode with John C. Narcomi Jr., creator and writer of Hightower Comics and all the cool, wonderful things that he does. How are you doing today, John?
I'm doing pretty good. A little beat up, but I'm good.
Cool. Now, we wanted to sit down and ask you some personal questions. Normally, you know, you are a friend of the show. We've had you on the show many times before, but normally it's either at a con or at a movie premiere or something, so we haven't had a chance to actually sit down, get to know you, and ask you some decent questions, some in-depth questions. So, hoping to look forward to doing that in this interview.
Sounds good.
Are you ready for them?
Yes, I am. That sounds pretty good.
Okay, so you're with Hightower Comics. Can you tell me exactly what you do here?
I work as a creative director for Hightower Comics and as one of the graphic novelists working under Hightower Comics, Inc. I've created Smart Bullets, Ghostface, Spooksville, Jungle Jack, pretty much the whole line of comics that we carry right now. I've illustrated everything but Smart Bullets, where we have the wonderful Jacob Crippen doing illustration chores on that for me. And I just pretty much try to keep everybody in line and get everything out on time and make sure everything looks good and is high quality and maintains what's got to maintain, and you know, keep my Neil and Daryl up to speed and just try to give everybody the best comics we can give them.
And how long have you been working with under the Hightower banner?
I've been working with Hightower now for a year. So this is my year anniversary at Hightower, and yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's a great company. It's a great little concept. You know, we always tout that we're Hightower Comics, the height of independent comics and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I think actually after this year, if everything goes the way I like it to go, then we might actually be able to, you know, it won't be just us touting that. There'll be other people saying that too.
So. Awesome. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about all the titles that you have and what they're about?
Okay, let me see. I guess we'll start with like the most popular. Well, we'll start with the two most popular since they're kind of tied up right now after Con. We got Ghostface, which is one of our first releases that came out back in October, and that is somebody said it best at Con. What did they tell me? It was what was it?
Like your flagship title?
Well, it's our flagship title, but somebody had a great... There's a fan at Con that reads Ghostface all the time, and he had the greatest tagline for it. Oh, this is it. Supernatural Gangster. That's what it is. I just thought that was so funny, because that's... You know, it's almost right on there. I mean, you know, if you're into pulp, if you're into whatever, you know... I mean, it's really got the... I guess there's a new thing coming around, too, with the advent of steampunk, this thing called... Diesel punk that I just found out that takes place in the 20s and the 30s, and I'm like, oh wow, I must be a predecessor of diesel punk, because I got all these crazy mechanicians that, you know, and that time period living well and strong in Ghostface, dude. So I kind of got to be exposed to different things just by making the book, and it's pretty cool, and the book's fun. I mean, it's just twisted, glorious pulp opera fun stuff, you know, and so... You know, that's what Ghostface is, and then, you know, we got Smart Bullets, which is, you know, I came over that for the simple fact that I had not seen an action movie like that, and I don't make action movies like that anymore, and I mean like that as in action movies where there's cussing still, and then there's some nudity still, you know, and they're just tough, and they're gritty, and you still see people get shot, and it's not a CG splurt of fucking blood, you know, and... This is a dirty little fucking action movie, you know, like back in the 80s or whatever. Yeah, that's why I wrote that. You know, that's what that's about. You know, Smart Bullets is... And I can't tell you what a Smart Bullet is, even though everybody asks. You have to buy the book to find out what a Smart Bullet is. You'll find out in the first few pages of issue number 3. But the characters are awesome. You got Johnny Rose, who's a thief. You got Cecil Ames, who's a cowboy, bodyguard type dude. And you got... Agent Graves and the FBI agent, and they all kind of team up and to save the creator of the Smart Bullets, which is a little woman professor from New Mexico named Charlene. And you know, it's just action on top of action on top of action, and tough guys on top of tough guys, and you know, and it's not pornographic, but we do have nudity. You know, great little shower fight scene between Agent Gray and an assassin, and you know, it's good stuff. And then Spooksville is Sweeps for the Bone Jangles cases, I would have to say, is like if I got Tex Avery, Raymond Chandler, and Tim Burton, and threw them all in the fucking blender, poured in the cup, that's Spooksville, man. It's just this black and white, dark, twisted little funny cartoon, and hopefully I'll get to play with it a little more. Right now, it's just a one shot. And, you know, it's, people like it, people that get it, they dig the artwork, you know, they dig the character, you know, they're digging the humor, and so that's always fun. And so hopefully I'll get a chance to play with it a little more and see if we could shed more light onto that. And then the other book we do that's sad to say that we probably won't be doing again is my favorite of all. is Jungle Jive. These little characters I've had around with me since God knows how long. And there's just a platypus, a tiki, and an ape man, and they just drink at a bar. And they get into shit, and they're trying to find a job, and they want to keep drinking, and the bartender keeps messing with them, and it's just pure Looney Tunes, big eyes, crazy faces, slapstick humor, you know, some verbiage, you know, reminiscent of the Marx Brothers and things like that, and it's just, it's probably the good, I probably have the most fun ever drawing those little guys, and it's just kind of unfortunate that we might have to just put them on the shelf for now.
Is that because that's not selling as well as you would hope?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, as a business standpoint, that's pretty much what I gotta look at. You know, as creative director, I can't just, you know, green light everything because I like it. You know, I have to be legitimately have a legitimate reason to continue some of these things, and I have to bite the bullet despite whether or how much I care about the project or not. Sometimes it just doesn't work financially, and I got more things to worry about than just my own artistic feelings. You know, you gotta. Yeah, I got employees. I got, you know, fucking people to pay. I want to keep everybody fed, you know.
How do you find yourself often put into that place where you're conflicted with, you know, what you want to put out and what you know will or will not sell?
Yeah, actually, you know, currently now, too, seeing Smart Pool has kind of hit its full potential at Comic-Con and seeing more what the market is gearing itself toward. You know, I'm seeing it now. Just artistically, with the way I have to do things to start selling more books around here. You know, because artistically, I'm not very commercial as an artist. You know, I have a very stylized bent to what I draw. Ghostface is very, very pared down and simplified and panel-oriented and I mean, almost as cartoony for how violent it is. And as opposed to, you know, the gritty realism that we're kind of got going on with Jacob and Smartbullets. And, you know, the sad truth is the market commercially, you know, doesn't want anything that's kind of not realistic looking, you know, which is fine. I mean, I grew up with artists like Jim Lee and Tom McFarlane, and well, I won't say Rob Liefeld because he was never realistic, but Stephen Platt and, you know, Ian Churchill and all these guys that, you know, Wilfer Tertio. I mean, these are the guys I grew up with when I was younger. And, yeah, those are the guys that got me excited, you know, and they're very gritty, realistic artists and things like that. And so it's cool, you know, if I got to change it up to sell some books and you know, keep pace and do what we got to do, because it is a very small company and there isn't a lot of this. And it is only me and Jake who do the art chores, and that's fine. I can. I'm very flexible. I mean, I could pretty much, I'm very flexible stylistically, let's just say that, so. It's all fun anyways. I mean, I have a job that most people would love to have, which is a job where I get to draw comic books and help other people draw comic books and shit. So, you know, but it might be a plan if I got to change things up a little bit.
Right. Everyone, please excuse the dog barking in the background.
Yeah.
That is not like some weird sex game we're playing or anything like that. It's just that actual dog barking in the background. So, well, you know, that leads me to my next question, Johnny, is that who were your influences when you were growing up? Who were your favorite artists, and who do you think influenced you the most in your art style and artistically?
Oh, wow. I've always been a weird kid, man. I was growing up, and at first I got into the... When I started the comics, I was reading Mad. So, you know, all those Jack Davis cartoons and all that kind of stuff really, really made me laugh, and my dad would buy that shit from me all the time. And, you know, that all stuff was cool, and then... You know, when I was growing up, it wasn't the Harvey Kirschner Mad. It was the Jack Davis Mad. It was the Will Elder. It was the, what's his name, Jaffe or whatever. I'm not going to say his last name. But it was all those guys by then, you know, and it was more realistic than Mad. And then I moved on to the Marvel Comics, and of course I got all kept swept up in Spider-Man and Captain America and all that kind of stuff. And then from there, you know, I kind of discovered DC because I was a huge Batman fanatic. I mean, I was Batman out of my fucking mind when I was a kid, dude. But then all of a sudden this movie called Dick Tracy came out, and I discovered this fucking guy named Chester Gould. And it was this grotesque, simple, abstract, baroque, just dark stuff. I mean, it was even darker because it was so cartoony that it was, like, twisted to me, man. And that really kind of lit my fire to go into, start going in different directions instead of taking all these realistic turns, you know. I mean, just seeing that form of expression, you know, seeing what somebody did with that, you know, that was really cool. And then, of course, you know, I probably totally forgot him when I discovered all the Image guys. You know, that was my high school life, you know, and those were the cool guys, and everybody knew who Spawn was. Like, comic books were actually, when I was in high school, it wasn't that nerdy, you know, because they were on the news, and they were collectible, and everybody was buying, and Superman was dying, and, you know, and you know, everybody knew about Thomas Fireman, and everybody knew, you know, Rob Liefeld had a butterfly gene commercial with Spike Lee, you know, and so everybody saw all this stuff, you know, and so I got really caught up in those guys for a while, and then, you know, kind of just, I guess, back when I started reading things by Alex Toth, and, you know, looking at older, I love the older comics regardless. I mean, as far as influences go, to the day I die, I'm always going to probably do one little cartoony book that's like Spooksville or something like that, where it draws on that stuff, like the Cliff Starrett, Paul Hammer Towns, and George Harriman's Crazy Cat, which is just phenomenal, Windsor. And if you want to see beautiful realism, which is almost intimidated me so much I didn't want to draw, was Windsor McKay, anything by Windsor McKay. I mean, the thing the guy did with a pen nib and a fucking piece of bristle board was fucking amazing. I mean, talk about like in 1918, 1914, when there was no such thing as computers, so this guy was creating worlds and designing things just out of control. So, I mean, those are the things I got into. Yeah, of course, as you get older, influences expand. I don't suggest anybody just be purely influenced by comics and comic strips. I mean, there's a whole world of things out there, especially if you're a comic book artist. You've got, you know, films, you know, Martin Scorsese, Quentin Tarantino, all those guys, storytelling-wise, and you got your other fine artists, you know, Pollock and Picasso and, you know, Degas and all those guys. You know, I'm just, you got to take it all in, man. You never got to stop learning. And that's one of the things I like about the guys that do follow. But these are guys that never, ever stopped. You know, they just kept evolving until they pretty much died. And that's cool with me, you know. And they were successful. You know, I hate this myth of the perpetuated of the starving artist. I mean, most artists were very successful. Michelangelo was rich. Leonardo da Vinci had a fucking castle. Like, you know, Picasso was very, very well off. You know, Van Gogh was the only one. He was crazy. You know, most of these guys were successful, hardworking people. I mean, they worked up their craft and they made it to sex out of themselves. And even with the cartoonists, Charles Schulz was a multimillionaire. You know, and Windsor McKay was incredibly rich with Little Nemo and all the work he did for the Hearst newspapers and all these guys. You know, it's only in comic books where you really start finding the kind of sad cases if you really look in the history of comics. You get back in the 60s and 70s during the Frederick Wortham hearings when artists were losing jobs because people were burning fucking comic books because they thought they caused you not a living to you. So that's where you get the real hard cases. Like Jack Cole, creative plasma, committed suicide, man. You know, almost going on broke. And he worked for Playboy and he just got a comic strip in the newspapers. And, you know, and other guys, Wallace Wood, I think, was just a drunk broke. And Joe Shuster, Jerry Siegel, man, those guys are pretty much painless at the end, too. Only in comics, people just get kind of screwed at it. That sucks. Hopefully at our time we can change all that, dude. I mean, things have changed anyways. I mean, there's more. The comic artists are now more legally minded, I think, than they've ever been, which is great. And, yeah, well, it's great. That's good. That's good.
You know, some stuff like that could have explained what led to the downfall of Marvel when they went bankrupt, and that, you know, they were trying to take care of the artists or just spreading themselves too thin, you know, to keep up with the supply and demand. Not only of the comic book buyers themselves, but the artists demanding that more money and more financial backing. And the fact that they're creating all this stuff that's making Marvel money and not making any money themselves.
Well, most of those guys at Marvel, from my understanding, they have the royalty tax. Marvel's contract's pretty much basically, look, this is what we're going to pay you. This is what your royalties are. Your book sells over, you start collecting change. You know, like, I think Mark McFarlane, Tom McFarlane, made his first million at Marvel, and I'm sure most of that was just off his royalties. The Spider-Man time was selling over a million some odd copies a month. You know, and Marvel itself was making about $1 million, $2 million a month anyway. You know, so, you know, but, you know, as businessmen, as far as the vendors are concerned, yeah, just the way they treat everybody, I think, kind of, is what brought them all to the head there. The way they treated the collector, all the way down, the way they treated the employees, the way, you know, it wasn't just Marvel. I mean, everybody was having these fucking off-the-wall practices to get people to buy books by the time '96, '94 came rolling around, when they all kind of, well, it wasn't '92, when it all kind of came falling down on everybody. Because we were DC, how many issues of Superman did they have before he died, and then all the other stuff they were doing? I mean, it just seemed to be just everybody was just multi-covered out of their minds, dude. I still got issues of Robin number one as miniatures. That has the first issue number one has like six different hologram covers and all
the variant covers. Marvel was doing the same when. With the X-Men titles, yeah. When they came out with the holograph cards and all that stuff.
Oh, man, that's what Jim Lee's X-Men of what came out, remember that? Yeah, you had to buy all the covers to make the image, and then they did one like a month later that was the gatefold, so you didn't even need the ones you just spent your fucking, what was it, like a dollar back then on? So you spent 6 months to get all the covers to make the image, so you could see what Jim Lee actually drew, but then you find out a month later, all you had to do was just buy the special one that just folded out anyways, and it was like, oh. Yeah, Marvel was ruthless. They were slick with it, though, man. You know, they were making their money.
Well, speaking about Marvel and DC and all that, what comics are you reading right now? What are your favorites that are out there?
Oh, man. Well, you know, I just picked up this book called, why am I always forgetting his name? Oh, my God. I just had a major brain fart, everybody out there, for doing a panel there.
Well, then why don't we do this? Why don't we go ahead and take a break, give you a chance to think, and when we come back, we'll conclude our interview with Sean. Be right back.
Forbidden Panel is currently looking for artists. If you or someone you know would like to join us, please visit www.forbiddenpanel.com.
And we're back, everybody, from our break. John's had time to think. Officially, we're back from our break. Continue our interview with John C. Narcomi Jr. of Hightower Comics. And we were discussing, John, the burning question that I had for you that stumped you and caused us to go to commercial was, what comics are you reading right now?
I am reading right now by Garland Cook, the new Hunter novel. It's not really a new graphic novel. It's called Hunter, but it's an adaptation of the Hunter novels the Parker novel is actually the first novel is called Hunter. You know, it's a beautiful adaptation. It's something that all comic books should strive to look like. Because if I didn't open it up and find it in the comic store, I would have just thought it was a book. And I would have thought it was a reprinting of the first Parker novel. Because it looks like a beautifully worked out with a hardcover book. And I'm also reading right now Donald Cook's New Frontier because I've had a chance to read all the way through it. I just bought the F-Student edition and I'm all excited about that. And then I'm reading Atomic Robo. Big shout out to those guys. You know, it's a fun, just nice little read, man. Something I could. Yeah, I think they do a great job.
Also, fans of the panel, friends of the panel,
right
read
on.
Five comics.
Right
Atomic
on.
Robo. It is an awesome book. I've read all three volumes, and yeah, you're right. It's fun, and it's kind of like educational at the same time because you're like, oh, well, I did not know that. Rock on, Tesla. Rock on.
Yeah. Well, this is for you, Atomic Robo guys, man. Red 5? Red 5 guys are the first guys to make a comic book that have made me laugh out loud in a long, 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 probably since Peter David's X-Card issue with Racine Shrink, time, back when Joker's Father still drew comic books. And that's a really, so I recommend that to anybody, dude. And then, what else do I read? I don't know. Anything about Magnolia, Hellboy, these like most stuff I do now, I just figure for the art. It's hard for me to find something now that I'm actually in process of creating things all the time to pick up something that's a comic for the story unless it really, really, really stands out. Because I just don't like having other things influence what I'm writing at the time, you know?
Do you find that to be a problem that you have?
Well, I'm kind of like a sponge, dude. You know, I pick up on everything, you know, and the more I pick up when I'm in the creative process, it's the harder for me to filter out what's actually in mind. You know, that's why, I mean, it works artistically, because I, you know, I can move from style to style because of that, you know, but as a writer, you know, your voice is kind of more preeminent because that's all you have, you know, and so I don't like, you know, when I write, there's nothing on, you know, there's not a TV, there's not a radio, it's just me and then the clacking of the keys and the noise in my head, because I need that needs to be, you know, true to form, you know, so I try not to get involved in anything else when I'm in the process of creating something, right, even when I'm doing, like, my little thumbnails, you know. Because I can always control the best of my ability stylistically how I'm going to work on something. You know, as I like to stylistically fit the book I'm working on. Like, Space Boogie is a book I'm working on right now. It's coming out in October. And, you know, it's a little homage to B-movies and 1950s sci-fi comics. You know, it's a little curvy. It's a little fun. It's bigger, blockier, heavier, you know, than what I usually draw. And I'm doing that because it fits the story I'm telling, you know. And, you know, we might do a reimagining of Ghostface, and that'll be a little darker, a little more realistic, and this is going to fit the story I'm telling, you know. So artistically, I don't mind seeing other stuff, but when I write, when it comes down to right before I'm getting everything ready, you know, all that stuff, all the layout stuff, everything, telling the story, and when it comes down to telling that story, you know, I don't like having anything going on, because making the book is, you know, telling stories is, to me, the fun part, you know, getting the thumbnails, getting the dialogue there, getting the pages laid out, roughing out synopsis, all that's the fun part, you know, putting everything on a board, that's work.
See, I'm like the complete opposite when it comes to that. Like, I like reading, not for, because it influences me, the writing style, but I think sometimes not the idea-wise of the story, but style-wise, sometimes it helps me out, like, oh, why didn't I think of going that route or what have you? And then when I do write, depending on what I'm writing, like, you know, with ZKS, like I'm writing right now, the action sequences, I'll put on music that kind of goes with it so I can write to a beat, so I can get a rhythm of how the sequence is going. So, that works for me, but I couldn't imagine writing in complete silence like that. I mean,
oh, yeah.
But if it helps you, that's awesome. I mean, everybody's got their own style of what they need. I mean, I'm thinking like Misery, you know, James Cobb sitting there with his cigarette,
well,
a couple of wine.
Because they want to keep me working, you know. I don't stop working every evening. So actually, because when I draw, I have noise. When I'm drawing a page, I have to have either DVD going or somebody in the room talking to me or the radio on. I need noise when I'm drawing, man, because it's just me and my head and I'm drawing. I'm going to get totally distracted and just not focus on what I'm actually working on. So I kind of need that distraction in the room, and it helps me, you know, maintain, because my head just fucking goes everywhere, no matter what the fuck I do. But as I'm writing, I mean, that's where I want to be most creative. I don't want anything interrupting. You know, I don't want anything else to come in and interrupt whatever ideas I might have, whatever things might be flowing. You know, that's the place where I get to be crazy and like, oh, this is a fucking great idea. I'm going to tell the guys about this in the morning to see what they say, or man, I'm not going to tell them about this, but I'm going to put it in here. You know, it's like when I was writing the dialogue for My Bullets Number 2, and Johnny Rose goes to hug his girl, and her head falls off, and I tear the dialogue apart, where he opens the van in the first panel, and he's all like, oh, there you are, I'm so glad you're okay and all in one, and then as soon as we get the next panel, her head falls off, and then he says, peace. You know, and that was, everybody's like, oh, what the fuck, Joe, that's so funny, that's great. And, you know, and that stuff doesn't, you know, if I'm watching it, you know, kind of, those names kind of, you know, they kind of have an ebb and flow by themselves with me, you know. But I do, you know, I read a lot, you know, I'm ferocious. I read everything, 3 or 4 books at a time. And so all that stuff's always with me, you know. I like seeing how other people solve problems, you know. I mean, you know, some of my, but you can also read a lot of trash. I mean, what people consider trash. You know, I read a lot of old pulp books. I read a lot of, because I want to, you know, even the whole goal with this company is just to entertain people, man. I'm not looking to, you know, redo Watchmen. You know, I'm not looking to climb Mount Everest and, you know, be the greatest comic book ever. So maybe one day when I'm older, you know, maybe one day when I'm fucking, all right, just take me seriously now, you know. But right now, I'm an entertainer, man. You know, I get an opportunity to get some of the same 15 minutes they gave me when I was a kid, dude. And that's pretty, that to me, that's cool, man, because, you know, I'm at it. It wasn't peaches and cream back in the day, dude. So those 15 minutes was kind of nice. 15 minutes I could roll up in my back pocket and take with me was even better, man. You know, I hate the whole collector idea. I got books probably in my collection that are worth a few $100s up to a few thousand. I just sit there and I thumb through them, because it's just comic books are made to be read. We at High Tower Comics make comic books to be read. You know, we make our sketchbooks to be collected. But the comic books, the things with the stories in it, man. You know, fucking roll that thing up in your back pocket, come over to fucking con and drop it off and let me look at it. You'll be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'll sign that thing for you, man, dude. I'm glad you enjoyed it. You know, I mean, that's what it's about. There ain't nobody reading it. So it's kind of like masturbation, man. You know, what the hell? Point of that, it's always fun when somebody else is involved.
Unless they're horrible.
Yeah, unless they're horrible, eh? You know, what are you guys fucking do about it?
Masturbate.
Kick them out, get the job done right.
This is how you do it.
So, you've been doing this for a year now. And we went out there. This was your first time that you had a booth at the San Diego Comic Book Convention. And you and I went out there on Tuesday and set everything up, and we were pretty amped and jazzed and excited about that whole experience. Was that experience able to carry you through? Or, I mean, did you still have that feeling the entire time you were at San Diego Comic Con? Or, you know, why don't you just tell us how your experience at Comic Con was and how it made you feel?
Comic Con kicked my ass. Dude, Comic Con was great for the simple fact that, you know, I got to see everybody buying the books, talking to us, old fans that we've had coming back, and that's always the cool part. You know, when some guy we met in October at the 8th is at Comic Con, I'm like, hey man, where's the next issue of Ghostface? Or, like, dude, I love that Smart Bullets, you know, I'm glad number 2's that, you know. Or like, oh, let me get a sketch. Or, you know, these people that have been following us, and you know, because we make coupons for our email members and our members online, and you know, those guys bring in coupons because they know who we are and they want our books and they're totally happy what we're doing, you know, and all that stuff. That juices, like, gives you like energy through the con, you know. Just, but as soon as they close that door and they kick everybody out, man, it's like, you know, I felt like every day there I felt really drained, man, because it's a lot. I mean, it's a lot. I've never dealt with it from the perspective of being there for something more than just looking at comics and having a good time. You know, we've done a lot of cons. You know, I even done the 8th when I wasn't working for High Tower, when I used to work for a studio called Dripping Dagger Studio. And, you know, and I've done other small cons, and, you know, and High Tower has done cons all year long, you know, and we've never done anything. I don't think a lot of people have ever even anticipated the scale that Comic Con is going to be this year. I've never done anything that scale, so it was definitely a learning experience, and I'm glad we got through. But yeah, we had a lot of great stuff that kept me going. I mean, that stuff was good. I mean, like, we weren't selling books, and everybody hated us, and we all did the story. I'm like, I don't want this interview. This really sucks, man. We totally blow. But you know, we had those people coming back. You know, we got to see our fans. We got to make new fans. We got to sell issues of Smart Bullets, and Jacob got to have a great time. And, you know, we got to do sketches, and I got to meet retailers, and I got to learn things, and I got to talk to people. And, you know, and we garnered a lot of interest, and we got rid of a lot of free stuff. And, you know, and all that to me, that's the fun part. You know, that's the stuff that keeps me juiced up through the 8 or 9 hours that the doors are open, and so I got to go back to the room, and reality sets in, and I'm like, I'm not as young as I used to be. Yeah. But, you know, that's calm for me, man. I mean, it kicked my ass, but, like, it's like in a good way, man. It's like if you just went to work out or something, you know, and, like, you've worked out hard as you can fucking work, man, and you're almost puking on the side, but you feel good about it because you fucking pushed it, you know, and that was time, man. We went there, we came, we saw, you know, we conquered, we're cool, we're back, we're alive, nobody's missing their legs, no arrows in our butts, and I didn't offend anybody, which is always good. At least I don't think I offended anybody this time. And, you know, that's awesome.
So you were still, like, I saw you guys at Con, you guys looked like you were having a blast, but still working. And then I looked in the Con magazine, and I saw your guys' name in there and everything, and I felt like, for you, a moment of pride, like, you know, like Maven and the Jerk when he sees his name and the telephone book, you know, and also
exactly.
So I was wondering if you had that same feeling when you had seen that,
yeah,
especially on Tuesday night when we were setting up.
That Tuesday night was awesome. Dude. I mean, I remember it's so funny what you said to him when we were set down. We were all talking about we're finding the wizard behind the curtain, man. We're gonna see the show for what it is now.
I know how pizza's made.
Yeah, you know how pizza's made, dude, and it's not gonna be the same. And you know, I got juiced up, man. I'm like, man, I know I cuss a lot on the show, but you know, we're fucking. I'm fucking here. Look at this. I have a pallet of my own shit that's getting dropped off, and I'm in Comic-Con. It's Tuesday. It's empty. The big guys are setting up, and so am I. You know, and that was cool. It's kind of like. All the hard work is finally paying off, you know, because, I mean, it's a lot of work. I suggest anybody who wants to do independent comedy, you best be prepared for some time, so it's a lot of work, man, and that was, and it did juice me up, and I did see my name in the thing, and I was like, hell yeah, you know, especially since I thought I missed the deadline to get my name in there. so, yeah, it was awesome, man. I mean, that stuff is, That point was cool. I mean, just being there after a year of all the hard work we've been doing, just being able to bring everybody with me. You know, I mean, because it wasn't, as much as I say me, you know, I mean, it was like none of it could have been done without Daryl and Neil or Jacob drawing smart bullets, you know, because I can't draw everything. You know, I can't write everything. I can't, you know.
Can't be everywhere
at one time, you know. And so it was great to share that with everybody. Sort of all, even my girlfriend, to you know, all these people that have participated, Chris for Four Color Fantasy, you know what I mean? Yeah, that guy was a great help, and he was there, and he participated, and, you know, all that stuff made it so much better. It was almost like the year-end party, you know? It was almost like, here's your last year, John, and here's everybody that got to, because
it's a gold watch.
Yeah. Everybody everybody that was at con with me shared at one point in this company, in the beginning of this company. Even the I used to work at Barnes & Noble, and an old manager of mine showed up at Con on Sunday, you know, was like, hey, man, did you hear? You buy some of your books, and yada, 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 you know. And you know, and she was the only person that Barnes & Noble that I talked to about comic books, because she was all in the comics, you know. And that was cool, man. You know, I mean, it was a really nice end cap to the year. You know, now obviously Monday starts and the work has to begin again.
That's why I always warn my friends 2 weeks before and 2 weeks after, don't bother. Don't bother, I'm busy.
That's why when Ghost Face number 3, we're trying to get it out before con, but it's just, there's so much that goes into getting there and being ready for that, that, you know, the last 8 pages that I would have had time to finish if I wasn't going to con, just didn't get done, you know, and which was unfortunate because we didn't have it for the show. But yeah, you know, I don't want to give anybody a crap book. I'm already strained on time as it is. Sometimes even I know, you know, I got to touch up some stuff, you know. So yeah, it was a lot of work, but it was cool, man.
Well, the fact that you're sitting here as exhausted as you are and you're still smiling, thinking about it, leads me to believe that you had an awesome time. And
yes, I did. Because I was so tired before we started talking about time. And now I'm all like, yeah, that was pretty fun.
like I was telling somebody else at con, it's like a relationship, you know. Like, when you're dating the girl, you realize all the quirks and stuff that you really don't like about her, at least for the breakup. But afterwards, you're like, man, she did that shit with her tongue.
That was amazing.
That was amazing. Or, you know, she would do this for me, she was always there. And that's, I think, what comedy
is. That's what comedy is,
man. Because we both walked out of there ass kicked. I had to hire somebody to help me carry my ass that was handed to me out of con.
Dude, I stayed there an extra night just because I didn't want to drive a measly hour and a half back home, man.
Exactly. But, you know, then you can look back on it and you're smiling about it. And that's what con does.
Yeah.
And so
I concur.
You concur, sir?
Yes, I concur. Your metaphor is correct.
And now, to wrap things up real quick, let me just ask you, what's coming up next for Hightower? What can we expect in the next year before the next con to see coming out of your company?
Pure and utter badassery. No, we have a... I guess I should do the...
And your snoring puppy, right?
And my snoring pug. But, not the... We have, obviously, we have the conclusion of Smart Moves. Issues 3 and 4 will be coming out, you know. And we'll be definitely We have Space Boogie coming out in October. That'll be ready to be previewed and looked at and bought and purchased over at the 8th. Man, and hopefully we'll be rolling into Jacob's Creator Own Project after that. You know, still is yet untitled and still is yet unconfirmed, so I can't really say too much. And then, we also have another Spooksville issue we want to try to get out there, another little one-shot. And then, of course, bring Ghostface back and see if we can get it as an ongoing. But we're actually looking and really excited that we had some good response from Diamond, and hopefully next year. The big shock by next con is that we'll be in stores across the nation. Man, that's the coolest thing for me, because, like I've said before, and I've iterated everywhere, and almost every interview I've done, we make these books be read, because if they ain't being bought, and they ain't being read, and they ain't being seen, and, we're not doing our jobs. So we've done our job good enough so far now to kind of nail down the whole Diamond thing a little bit better, and so now we'll be able to get out there a little more. So hopefully in the next, I'd say 6-7 months, you guys might start seeing a Hightower more prevalent in stores everywhere. Oh, so start asking for this, because that's how these guys like it. They want to know these store owners want to know that you guys are going to buy the fucking book you're asking for. Because they ain't going to look for me. Even because I'm into having don't mean nothing. It's still a big-ass catalog with a lot more important, financially, important books in front of me, in order to make a statement. All our little fans got to go in and say, hey, what's up? We want the Hightower. You got to be high. You got to be hardcore with the Hightower, man. You got to go in there and get it. But, but that's what we're looking at for next year, man. And then, to go from there, seeing where it takes us, And we always got exciting stuff, and we always seem to be getting nice little exciting opportunities in other media as well. And so obviously we'll be exploring that. And
where can we find you for the next cons? Will you be at Ape or anything like that? Where can we see you physically for the next year?
Well, my address is next.
Aside from on the couch, behind the computer.
Physically, this is my favorite spot in the house right now because it's comfy. What is it? Now, our next con, well, actually, here we go. Our first promotion outside of Comic-Con will be at Four Color Fantasy for 24-hour Comic-Con. Okay.
Which will be there as well, hint, hint.
Yes. And so definitely come by to that one. And then mid-October, we'll be at the 8th. After that will be WonderCon. And then I still don't know yet if we're going to do the Mesa, Arizona Con. I'm thinking about it. Got to get information back from those guys. But that was
part about Wizard.
I was there last year. About to work and ask questions. I didn't want
it. What are you talking about?
I just found out that Wizard is doing a show now. Now, I don't know if I'm going to do it or not. It is almost way too close not to be there. But there's also a show in Long Beach, and I'm kind of more inclined to be at that one than I would be at that, depending on how things work out. But the guarantee shows I have for everybody are going to be the 8th WonderCon, and of course Comic-Con. And, I'm actually really would like to do the Mesa, Arizona show, because that was a great show. I went there last year to promote our books, just hand out free stuff and walk around and see everything, and that was an awesome place, man. They had a lot of independent guys. They had a lot of great artists, of course. Todd McFarlane is out there, so him and Willis were there promoting the new Spawn. That's when he just shot something and hit, and Willis jumped on the book. That's when the Mesa, Arizona con hit last year. And so I would love to do that again, and actually have a booth there and hang out with all those guys and see what their comic books are like and all that kind of stuff. But as far as concrete shows go, as of now, it'll be WonderCon, it'll be the 8th WonderCon and Comic Con, and maybe the Shriner show out now later in September. Just for shits and giggles.
Awesome, awesome. Well, John, I want to thank you for taking your time out here to talk to us. And where can we find you online if we want to purchase any books and before you get distributed? before you get too popular for us to come up and touch you, and you know, be close to you and shit. We're probably gonna make an appointment with your secretary to come over and hang out.
Get your books for free anyway. Don't even know why you're complaining about how you gotta buy them and shit. I just had a giant stack last week. You still haven't reviewed all of them.
See, now it's my fault. Con, well, I was at the same con you were at, motherfucker. Anyway.
You can watch our books online at www.hightowercomics.com. And you can also become a member, and we offer discounts and coupons and membership prizes and contests. And, you know, and like we did for Con, we, you know, we gave all our members a coupon. You know, that they could buy one, get one free. And it was just for the, for just for our members, just for our fans. You know? And we'll be doing more of that for more of the shows we do, because we've got members all over the United States, and so we want to get everybody involved. And, you know, we always have blogs and movies reviews, and we're always talking smack and like to hear what everybody has to say. You know, like, what do we, what was the last review that got a lot of response? What the hell was, what movie was that? The Wolverine movie, man. Everybody jumped on the bandwagon and talked smack on that one. Who defended? All you defenders of that movie, I don't know. But, you know, so we, you know, we have a good time on here, man. It's all. We got a gallery open for all the cons we have done. We got a from the Ape and from the first time I was at con where I just had flyers and postcards and a camera, man, you know. So there's all kinds of good stuff looking out there. And you get all the previews of the books. You know, you got 8-page little previews that we have for every title we carry. So if you don't know if you like it or not, you can check it out on there and go order it and all that kind of fun stuff. And there's links to all our shit so you get... Like, if you like prints and art, you could buy prints through our DeviantArt page and things like that. So, yeah, that's the website, www.hightowercomics.com. H-I-G-H, people. Not high. We're not those guys. It's another company altogether, I think.
That's a subsidiary. That we're not allowed to talk about on air.
Pretty much, dude. All
right, well,
I have a medical license to this.
All right, John, well, once again, thanks a lot for taking some time with us.
Anytime.
And with that, we'll go ahead and say goodbye. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in.
Bye.